on the favorite son who's watching how the West was won. Daddy, please, a plastic gun. Get brother one for twice the fun. Little camo helmet heads, making brave and playing dead. And missiles made of gingerbread and dollars on the dice.
Chapter 18. A Handful of Dust.
So bring your kids and coddled pets, bouncing babes and bassinets. We'll play a game with tanks and jets. Better yet, bayonets. Marching bands and color guards and funerals in your own backyard. And don't forget your credit card. Johnny, hold the light. Show the merchant kings of war and woe have turned their hands to labor. Sound out the trumpet noise, the cannons bark and jump for joy. Someone's threatened, darling boy, has fallen on his saber. Yes, someone's threatened, darling boy, has fallen on his saber.
Almost everyone remaining in the Jedi Temple turned out to see Obi-Wan Kenobi brought to trial. For something that was supposed to be a secret, it hadn't been kept very well, and Ahsoka didn't know if that was by accident or design. Hundreds of Jedi had already left the temple with the Republic fleet and the invasion force, more Jedi than Ahsoka had ever seen leave the temple at once in her entire life. She didn't know where they were going. The rumor put their destination at everywhere from Alderaan to Naboo. Barriss thought Dak or Raxus, where the Separatist Congress was supposed to be meeting soon, were most likely. Ahsoka thought they were going to reinforce the siege at Both Wai. It could have been anywhere, really. Master Plo wouldn't tell her, even though he knew, and they weren't assigned to go since he had to be here for the trial. Ahsoka was a little disappointed, because the invasion force was probably going to be a part of history, but she thought she would rather be here for the trial. Even if she wasn't going to be allowed to see any of it, since it was a closed trial. They had to take Kenobi up through the Great Hall to get from the underlevels to the Council Spire, and it was in the Great Hall that everyone had gathered. Ahsoka and Barriss, shepherding around a flock of younglings, pushed their way to the front of the crowd, where they had a good view of exactly nothing. Well, that wasn't quite fair, since they had a pretty good view of the ranks of cloaked temple guards, but they couldn't see Kenobi at all. Ahsoka had never seen so many guards in one place, not even when they had arrived at the temple, and seeing them all together like this impressed on her the severity of the situation in a way she hadn't appreciated before. There were dozens of them, all masked and cloaked with their archaic yellow saber staves ignited. Somewhere in the midst of their ranks was Kenobi. Ahsoka could sense him distantly, but it was hard to get a bead on him with so many Force-sensitives around, especially since Master Plo had hinted that the Council was using something to keep him Force-null, even outside the wards in the high-security cells. There were murmurs as the ranks of Temple Guards marched by, the crowd clearing to either side to let them pass. Someone, Ahsoka didn't know who, said, "Traitor," and spat on the floor. There was a soft murmur, and then someone else yelled, "Jedi killer! Traitor! Darksider!" The force swelled with fury, making Ahsoka's heart pound and her skin prickle. The younglings drew closer to her, and she put her arms out, gathering one on each side of her as Barriss did the same. She met Ahsoka's gaze over the heads of the younglings, clearly wondering the same thing as Ahsoka, if the Jedi were going to riot. Jedi weren't supposed to lose control that way, but the last time Ahsoka had felt this much tension in the air, she and Master Plo had been on Belderaan overseeing a contested election that had turned into a military coup. There had been riots then. She looked around for the nearest exit, knowing that if it came to anything worse than slung words, she and Barriss would have to get the younglings out as quickly as possible. Barriss was doing the same, her gaze flicking quickly around the crowded space of the Great Hall, filled nook and cranny with every Jedi still on Coruscant, except for the youngest younglings in the High Council. The only open space was around the ranks of the temple guards, who were proceeding at a slow, ceremonial pace towards the back of the hall. So far, they hadn't reacted to the insults being thrown at Kenobi. "Walk faster," Ahsoka thought furiously at the temple guards. "Can't you see that they want to kill him?" Maybe she knew that Obi-Wan Kenobi hadn't murdered Master Koth and Master Luminara, but most of the Order didn't. And it had been a very, very long time since there had been a full council trial. Even for someone who was at most only a gray Jedi, not a dark Jedi, within the walls of the temple. She held her breath, ready to bolt for the exits at the first sign of real trouble, and only started to let it out once it looked like the onlookers had remembered that they were Jedi. Then a female knight, who Ahsoka didn't recognize, yelled, "Murdering traitor! I hope the council throws you from the highest spire of the temple!" It wasn't the worst thing anyone had said, and Ahsoka thought that it was going to pass like all the rest, until she heard Kenobi's cultured voice rise over the shouting. "You call me traitor, Cadran Sy? Fine words from a knight who took credits from the huts to look the other way at a slave auction in Ar Shaddaa 2 years ago. Murdered an undercover police officer on Dantooine 6 years past. And sold the time and place of cartel shipments to the Trade Federation half a dozen times over the past year." There was a moment of stunned silence, shock radiating from the gathered crowd. Then Sae screamed, "Liar!" and flung herself forward, her lightsaber flashing in her fist. None of the Jedi standing around her had expected that. Ahsoka leapt back, reaching for her own lightsabers, even though she was too far away to make any difference. Then saw the temple guards surrounding Kenobi move in smooth, practiced unison. Two of them slipped in to disarm Sae, while another dropped her to the ground and put her in binders. She spat a curse into the marble floor before she was hauled to her feet. "He's lying!" "Quick and vicious as a striking snake," Kenobi said. "Perhaps the Jedi Order ought to consider putting its own house in order before concerning itself with mine." "You lying murderess!" Syndralig, the master in charge of temple security and commander of the temple guard, stepped up in front of Cadran Sae and tapped his lightsaber hilt against her jaw. "If I were you, Master Sae, I would hold my tongue until it was my turn in front of the Council of Reconciliation. Those are very serious charges." Sae, as a black female whose hair hung in black locks on either side of her face, said, "Kenobi's a traitor and a liar and a Jedi killer. Don't tell me you believe his dreck, Drolig." "I believe that you just tried to murder an unarmed prisoner in front of half of the Order, Master Sae," Drolig said. "As for the rest, well, that is yet to be established." He nodded to the guards holding her. "Take her to the cells." Off Sae's snarl of frustration, the guards jerked her around and began marching her in the direction they had just come from. Drolig returned his lightsaber to his belt and glanced around at the Great Hall. Unlike the guards, he wasn't masked, but that didn't make his expression any less inscrutable as he looked around. At last, without saying anything, he turned and walked back to the ranks of guards, who began moving again at some signal from him. Ahsoka could feel the tension in the hall, waiting for someone else to start shouting or for Kenobi to say something else. But instead, a kind of deathly silence had taken hold of the assembled Jedi. They stood still and quiet until the procession had passed through the hall, then, slowly, began to disperse. Ahsoka leaned over towards Barriss, keeping a youngling tucked under each arm. "Do you think it's true?" Barriss was shepherding her younglings toward the exit nearest to the creche, but at this she looked up and said, "Would he have said it if it wasn't?" But how did he know? One of the younglings chirped. Barriss and Ahsoka looked at each other. Then Barriss said slowly, Everyone knows that Naboo has spies on worlds from Tython to Moribund. That must be how.
He didn't just take it out of Master Sei's mind? Another youngling asked.
He couldn't, Ahsoka said. Not from a Jedi Knight. And he's being kept Force Null anyway.
At least that was the rumor. Ahsoka didn't know if it was true, but the memory of the high-security cells beneath the temple kept her up at night, remembering the sudden deadness of the wards cutting her off from the Force. If the High Council had done that to him, there was no way they would let him into the main part of the temple with his ability to use the Force intact, especially not with an audience.
But is it true? A small Twi'lek youngling asked, determinedly. Did Master Sei really do all those things?
Azeltron, junior Padawan, barely older than the rest of the younglings, tugged on one of her leku, making her squeak.
If she didn't do it, then why would she try and kill him? Of course she did it. My master says Master Sei cuts too many corners and doesn't have any respect for the code or the council.
His master, Ahsoka knew, had been sent off with the rest of the invasion force. He'd been left behind as too young and inexperienced to accompany them.
The Council of Reconciliation will determine whether or not Master Sei is guilty, Barriss said firmly. It's not for us to decide, since we don't have any evidence. Now come on.
There were more younglings in the creche than usual, since the Council had pulled all the off-world classes back to Coruscant in the wake of the declaration of war. Some of the younglings were actually Padawans like the Zeltron, left behind while their masters were on assignment elsewhere. Ahsoka and Barriss delivered their group of younglings back to the creche masters, answered their curious questions about what had happened in the Great Hall, to several responses of, I always knew there was something off about that Cadran Sei, and finally escaped to wander the halls of the temple. Even though there were more Jedi in the temple at once than there had been in years, Ahsoka could still feel the absence of the Jedi who had left with the invasion force. It shouldn't have been noticeable, but somehow it was, and she found herself wondering where they were now, where they were going, if they had gotten there yet. When she would know if they had accomplished what they had set out to do.
Let's go spar, she said to Barriss, who nodded. There wasn't anything else to do except wait. She didn't have an assignment right now. Barriss didn't have a master right now. And they wouldn't know for hours, maybe even days, what the outcome of Captain Kenobi's trial was. At least sparring would burn off some of her restless energy.
Have you ever heard of a loose knight? Barriss asked quietly, as they made their way towards the nearest sparring courts, which were scattered throughout the temple. Ahsoka bit her lip.
Just rumors, she said. But Jedi don't do that. Take bribes, or look the other way, or any of those things that Captain Kenobi said.
But Cadran Sei had tried to kill him.
She shook her head. Wouldn't the Council have known if she was loose?
What if they didn't care? Barriss shot back.
But we're Jedi, Ahsoka said, uncomfortable at the suggestion.
How could Kenobi know and not the High Council? Even if he isn't a dark Jedi, he is still the enemy. How could he know and not the Council?
Ahsoka looked down, studying the pattern on the floor.
I don't know, she admitted. But my master's on the Council, and you know that he'd never allow anything like that to happen.
Maybe Master Plo wouldn't, but what about all the rest? Barriss said.
If it really was a lie, then Master Sei wouldn't have attacked Captain Kenobi in front of everyone.
Master Drolleg seemed like he believed it.
Master Drolleg turned down a proxy seat on the council for the trial, Ahsoka felt compelled to point out, even though she couldn't put her finger on why that was important.
Maybe Master Drolloc knows something we don't, Barriss said.
Ahsoka didn't have an answer for that.
Hand me the number 6 hydra spanner, will you?
Rex dug it out of the toolbox and passed it over to General Skywalker, who was on his back beneath an NT-3 gunship.
Thanks, he said absently, taking it from Rex, then banged it against something deep inside the gunship's portside engine.
Rex hadn't thought that was the usual technique for fixing an engine peppered with holes from blaster shots, but who knew?
General, I've been thinking, he said.
Yeah? Better you than me. Skywalker hit something again, then held his hand out and added, Can you pass me that electric grip?
Rex handed it over, pondering the best way to phrase his concerns, then finally decided to just say it.
You need to tell Queen Amidala about command word retribution, sir.
There was a moment of silence. Then Skywalker slid out from beneath the gunship and sat up, setting the tools aside. He pushed a hand back through his hair, getting engine oil on his forehead, and said,
Go on.
These are good people, General, Rex said, picking his words carefully.
Maybe the Seppies, but they treat clones a damn sight better than most of the regulars I knew back in the Republic. They don't deserve to have an armed bomb sitting in the middle of them.
Also, sir, with all due respect and speaking from experience, no one, clone or not, deserves to be used like that.
Without meaning to, he reached up and rubbed his fingers over his temples, remembering the insistent pressure inside his head.
Execute command word retribution.
His body hadn't been his own.
General Skywalker gave him a look sympathetic enough to make Rex wonder if he knew more about that than he had ever let on.
You're right, he said. Retribution and Order 66 and whatever other nasty tricks Sidious had tucked up his sleeve are too dangerous to let go.
He pulled his knees up and rested an elbow on them, tilting his chin against his fist.
I owe you an apology, Captain.
Sir? Rex said, surprised.
General Skywalker didn't apologize often. Most Jedi didn't, in his experience. Few of them ever considered that they might have done something that needed apologizing for.
For Odrin, Skywalker said. The first thing Obi-Wan ever told me once we became generals instead of just knights. You never leave your men.
And I left you.
I'm sorry.
Not your fault, sir, Rex said. He didn't ask for that thing to take you for a ride.
I still left, Skywalker said. Jesse and Tup told me about what happened to the 501st.
Rex looked down, the memories sparking pain through him, and tried to hide his wince. He'd had brothers die before, but never an entire battalion, not like that. If the 501st had to die, then it should have died in combat, not smothered by the REMFs in high command. The 212th had been a good place to be, but it wasn't the 501st.
If I hadn't... In the other timeline, the future where I... It was. The 501st survived the end of the war, Skywalker explained. They were still around when I showed up 22 years later.
His mouth tightened for a moment.
Vader's fist.
Rex flinched. General, if the only way for the 501st to survive was to kill good men and women, then I'd rather every last man of us died on the battlefield.
Skywalker looked up at him in surprise.
You don't mean that.
Sir, I know that when General Kenobi knocked me out back in the Senate building, I was trying to put a blaster bolt in my own brain before I put one in his. Cody and the rest of our brothers never even got that choice. The general grimaced and looked away.
I didn't know that, he said. I'm sorry.
I got it better than Cody did, sir.
Skywalker shifted his shoulders, as if bracing himself to take a hit, and said,
I never asked what happened to Cody. I just assumed he was killed in the fighting.
Well, that was true, after a manner of speaking.
I shot him in the head, Rex said.
Skywalker stared at him.
What?
He couldn't fight it, Rex said.
He was too good at following orders. He tried to kill General Kenobi and Senator Amidala. I had to stop him.
Skywalker ran his hands over his face.
I wish you hadn't had to do that, he said quietly. I know you and Cody were friends.
Rex looked down.
If Cody had been in his right mind, he would have done the same thing, he said. The rightful order is one thing. What happened back there? That was just chaos.
He glanced around at the hangar bay. Even though there was a 26-hour presence on the base, it was an off-hour right now, and there were only a few other RNSFC corpsmen around, working on the starfighters and gunships that had been damaged in the Trade Federation attack. Somewhere in the hangar was Skywalker's handmaiden minder. It was Lady Mautier this shift, but Rex didn't see her right off. By now, he and General Skywalker had become a familiar presence in Hangar Esk. The RNSFC engineers had figured out that Skywalker actually knew what he was doing, and one clone more or less didn't raise any eyebrows. The latter was part of the problem.
No one deserves chaos, General, Rex said quietly. Not even the Seppies. Never thought I'd be saying that, he added dryly, and Skywalker chuckled a little.
I hear you there, Captain, he said.
There are worse things than Seppies, though, and these ones aren't so bad. No clankers, anyway.
He reached behind him to pat the side of the gunship proprietarily, looking at it with more fondness than he'd ever bestowed on the LAATs the Gar used. To be fair, the Starhawk was a hell of a lot prettier than the Lartes, which had been designed for function, not aesthetics. The Naboo went for both. Skywalker scratched at the base of his hairline.
I'll talk to Obi-Wan and Padme, he said. Maybe the Negotiator.
He rolled his eyes at the nickname, making Rex grin. General Kenobi's negotiations tended towards the aggressive side. Can come up with a good way to break the news to the Queen that a third of her troops are probably brainwashed to kill her on command.
Or you could tell me, Lady Mautier said, walking out from behind the side of the gunship and making them both jump, Skywalker's hand twitching toward his lightsaber before he stopped himself.
Now.
Skywalker grimaced. You need to wear a bell, he told her. The Queen's handmaiden leaned against the Starhawk and tucked her hands behind her belt buckle. She was in what was apparently called handmaiden battle dress. Tight, tan-colored pants with dark red stripes on the sides, with a sleeveless tunic over it and gauntlets that left her upper arms bare, and which, Rex suspected, had a few nasty tricks tucked away inside to go with her holstered blaster. Her dark hair was done up in a fan at the back of her head, leaving her neck bare.
You need to talk, Jedi, she said. If my queen is in danger...
Skywalker grimaced and unfolded his legs to stand up.
We need to go somewhere else, he said, with a faint gesture at Rex.
Rex stood too, watching the handmaiden's sharp brown eyes track the movement.
Good instincts, that one.
Why? Mautier said, not moving.
Because trust me, m'lady, you're not going to want anything I'm about to tell you overheard, Skywalker said. with his arms full of spare parts. Ani didn't have a hand free to hit the door control. He started to swing an elbow towards it, then stopped and changed his mind. Instead, he stared at the control until it depressed and turned green, the doors grinding open for him. Grinning to himself, Ani stepped into the hangar and stopped, staring at the trim Royal N1 Starfighter parked next to Twilight.
"Oh, hell no,"
Ani said, setting the box of parts down against the wall and reaching for his blaster.
"3PO!"
C-3PO came tottering down the Twilight's ramp as Ani drew his blaster. "I am so sorry, Master Ani. I couldn't stop her."
"Stop who?" "I'm really rethinking Alice's decision to give you back your weapon, Skywalker,"
Pilot Officer Joss Vitan Rail said, following 3PO out of the Twilight.
Ani stared at her, then holstered his blaster, since there was no way he could get away with shooting an RNSFC officer. "What in blazes are you doing here?"
"The commander sent me to keep an eye on you," she said, sounding unhappy about it.
Ani scowled, then hit the control to close the doors and picked up the box of parts again.
"What the hell is wrong with you people?" he demanded. "It's been a week, and I haven't done anything more exciting than cracking open my ship's hyperdrive, and you people still have me under surveillance."
"Orders from above."
Her mouth twisted.
"They thought you might react better to another pilot."
"They?" Ani echoed. "The Secret Service? The Queen's Guard? Who in blazes is they?"
"There is no Secret Service," Tom Rell informed him briskly. "That's a myth."
"Ha ha," Ani said, stepping past her to carry the box inside.
"I don't believe you. Come on, 3PO.
"I'm so sorry, Master Ani,"
C-3PO repeated.
"It's fine," Ani said.
"Pretty sure there's nothing you could have done to stop her anyway. This one's a pistol."
"What does that even mean?" Tom Rill said, turning on her heel to follow him into the hold.
"For a moon truckie, you sure haven't gone out system much, have you?"
Ani said, rolling his eyes even though he knew she couldn't see them.
"A what? Speak basic." "Leave Naboo once in a while, pilot officer," Ani said.
He set the box down next to the other cases of spare parts he had picked up.
A lot of it would probably turn out to be either junk or useless for anything he actually had on board the Twilight, but he had a talent for making junk work, and if not, he could always pawn it off on some other sucker in the future. He might learn a thing or two, starting with the slang.
"What, so I can sound like some Rimworld smuggler?"
"So you can sound like a human being instead of a droid," Ani said, turning around to face her.
He crossed his arms over his chest.
"Seriously, pilot officer, what the hell do your people want? I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going to do anything stupid that might get me disappeared by the Secret Service."
"There is no Secret Service.
Or the Queen's Guard, whatever. I'm not a Republic spy, or a Jedi spy, or whatever you people think I am."
"I think you're a nuisance," Tom Rell said.
"But no one asked me. They just said, 'Hey, Josphy, get in your starfighter and hop on over to Theed Central. Sit on Skywalker until we tell you otherwise.' I should be with my squadron right now."
"I wish you were with your squadron right now," Ani snapped.
"Then consider the fact that this was probably the closest he was ever going to get to a real working N1.
"Can I have a look at your starfighter?"
"You what?"
She sounded as scandalized as if he'd asked to see her naked.
More, maybe.
She probably expected him to make a come on to her.
Ani grinned.
"You heard me."
"Why?"
"Why not?" At her blank stare, he shrugged and said,
"Worth a try. Pilot officer, if you're expecting to actually see anything more interesting than the inside of the Twilight's hyperdrive, you're going to be real disappointed.
I'm not that kind of guy."
"I'm just here on orders,"
Tom Riel said, scowling. I'm a pilot, not a spy. I think they only sent me because they already had to clear me about the alternate universe thing. She looked deeply uncomfortable about the words, which pretty much summed up Ani's exact feelings on the concept. So they didn't have to tell anyone else. He snorted. Yeah, right. Is it even worth me trying to throw you off my ship, or are you just going to arrest me again? I wouldn't try. Ani rubbed a hand over the back of his neck and swore in his native Huttese. I can't criffin' believe I thought this would be a good idea back on Isolde. Run these freaks out in the booth, Skywalker. What's the worst that can happen? I have no idea what you just said, Tom Riel informed him briskly. Do you have a problem with Basic or something? Lady, I grew up on a hot world, Ani said. You're lucky I even speak Basic. No, 3PO, don't say anything, he added quickly, holding up a hand to forestall C-3PO's addition to the conversation, since it would doubtless be insulting. Come on, pilot officer. I'll give you the half-credit tour, since it looks like there's no way I'm getting out of this poodoo. Tom Riel followed him deeper into the twilight. Were you really a slave? She asked. Ani grit his teeth, glad that she couldn't see his expression. No, I just stuck an indent tag against my spinal column and put a runaway slave bounty on myself for the hell of it. What happened? None of your damn business, Ani snapped. Seriously, pilot officer, I don't talk about it, so don't ask. I'm sorry, Tom Riel said after a moment. I guess it's a delicate subject. It's not delicate, I just don't talk about it. Ani rubbed a hand over the back of his neck, over the scar where he'd had the explosive removed, and the place where the chip still was. For the first time, he wondered if the other Anakin Skywalker still had the blasted thing implanted, or if the Jedi had better medical tech than was available on the rim. It wasn't exactly the sort of thing he'd thought about asking when they'd first met. It's just hard to believe that slavery still exists in the galaxy. What part of I don't talk about it do you not understand, pilot officer? He pointed. Cargo hold. Other cargo hold. My loader droid's in there with the vultures Her Royal Highness gave me. Refresher. Passenger cabins. Converted cargo holds. Galley. My cabin. My workshop. What's in there? The vintage swoop I'm restoring and a bunch of mostly dead droids I picked up in a junk shop on Todoria on my last run out, Ani said. Touch the swoop and die. Tom Riel raised her eyebrows. What kind? Los and Winter Raider, Anniversary Edition, Ani said. You ride? Sometimes, but my sister is the one who used to do it competitively. Ani gave her a more appreciative look. Figures that a vacuum jockey would be a speed demon, too. Now you're just making up words to annoy me, Tom Riel said. Don't tempt me, pilot officer. Do I even want to know how you knew Cadrian Say was loose? Quinlan asked, walking over to the turbo lift as the door slid open. Most of the guards had been left behind at the base of the central spire, leaving Obi-Wan accompanied only by 4 guards and Syndralig, who looked grim as usual. Obi-Wan looked tense, which probably had to do with the fact that he was going to his trial and the entire Jedi Order had nearly rioted over him. Though Quinlan was willing to bet the binders on his wrists and the force-nulling collar on his throat didn't help any. I'm good at what I do, he said shortly. Better than the Order, apparently. He tipped his head back, visibly trying for nonchalant, but all the gesture did was make the tendons in his throat flex against the collar. Would you like to know the other dirty Jedi I'm aware of? Maybe later, Quinlan said, motioning the guards away with a jerk of his chin as he drew Obi-Wan towards the benches on one side of the antechamber, where Thom and Thrasa were waiting. How many are there? Six that I know of off the top of my head, Obi-Wan said.
Enjoy the show.
The security holograms recorded it, Thrasa said, standing up to greet him. She was a tall, nut-brown, netty female with hair like bundles of fine twigs, each of which moved independently, strutting forward to investigate Obi-Wan as he and Quinlan strode over.
Are you unharmed?
Even if my new friends over there had let Say anywhere near me, I could have taken her with both hands tied behind my back, Obi-Wan said dismissively.
Master Sa, Master Thulm, it's a pleasure to see you again, though the circumstances could certainly be better.
He bowed at the proper angle for a knight greeting a pair of senior masters, which was more than Quinlan could have managed in shackles.
Qui-Gon always said you'd be a troublemaker if you ever put your mind to it, Thulm observed, staying seated. His cane leaned against the bench beside him.
Obi-Wan shrugged.
I'm sure this wasn't what Qui-Gon was expecting, he said.
His gaze flickered to the closed doors to the council, guarded by a pair of temple guards. The others were standing at rest on the other side of the antechamber, accompanied by Drolleg, who was watching them.
Probably not, Thulm agreed. He did say you'd distinguish yourself in the annals of the Jedi Order.
Well, he was right about that, Obi-Wan said. I just don't think he meant my becoming the first Jedi in a millennium to go up in front of the full council for crimes against... what was it again? The Force, the Order, and the Republic?
That's it, Quinlan said.
Obi-Wan's mouth twisted.
Well, what are we waiting for?
He said, tilting his head in the direction of the doors.
Let's not drag it out.
They will open the doors when they are ready, Thra said.
She gestured at the bench. Will you sit, Captain Kenobi?
No, thank you, Master Saw, Obi-Wan told her politely. I'm sure that as soon as I get comfortable, I'll be expected to get up and argue for my life.
Quinlan tucked his hands into his sleeves, studying Obi-Wan as unobtrusively as he could, while Obi-Wan spoke with Thra and Thulm. Almost 2 weeks in the high security cells had taken its toll on him. He looked exhausted and drawn thin, the shadows under his eyes clashing with his yellow and green bruises. He'd been offered the opportunity to shave, but had opted for a close-clipped beard instead, which disguised the hollows in his cheeks somewhat. The ugly gleam in his eyes reminded Quinlan of the hollows he had seen of Obi-Wan after the occupation of Naboo had ended. Hard-edged, weary, and with something broken inside him that had been whole before. Then Obi-Wan said something that made him blink and look again.
What?
I said I want the collar off, Obi-Wan snapped. He reached up with his bindered hands to hook a fingernail beneath the thin synth leather of the force-knowing collar, though it was too tight for him to get a finger under it. I'm not a dark Jedi. I'm not going to go mad and attack the Council. I also know that they can't read me accurately with a collar on, so yes, I want the blasted thing off.
He bared his teeth delicately.
And it's not going to do much for my ability to argue my own case, either.
Obi-Wan, you know that the High Council will never agree to that, Thra said gently.
Thulm grimaced, but nodded. They're trying to do this one by the book. They won't take the collar back until you're back in the cells.
At which point it won't matter anymore, Obi-Wan snorted.
He ran a hand over his chin, sighing, and added,
I don't see what having me in a force null collar accomplishes, except to make the Council feel better. If I wanted to try breaking out, I would have gone ahead and started the blasted riot. Say I wasn't the only loose Jedi in that crowd.
Don't get overconfident, Obi-Wan, Thra said.
Trust me, Master Saw, he told her wearily. The last thing I am is overconfident. For a moment, his exhaustion shone through. The tendons in his throat flexed against the collar as he swallowed, and he twisted his wedding ring around his finger with quick, nervous jerks. The doors to the council chamber slid open, and they all looked over, Obi-Wan tensing and catching his lower lip between his teeth for a brief second. The two temple guards moved to either side, their saber staves shifting to a position perpendicular to the floor. Obi-Wan's hesitation only lasted for an instant. Squaring his shoulders and raising his chin, he strode forward, as calm and comfortable as any knight going to report before the council. The guards let him pass without protest. He was right, Quinlan thought, as he followed Obi-Wan into the chamber, Tra-Sa pausing behind him to help Tholm up from his seat. He couldn't get a read on Obi-Wan at all through the Force. The blasted collar was blocking everything ingoing and outgoing. Since the entire point of the trial was to determine whether or not Obi-Wan was using the dark side of the Force, Quinlan didn't see how having it on was helping anyone's case. Counting him, Tra, and Tholm, there would be 15 Jedi in that room, all of them armed. If he had miscalculated and Obi-Wan made a break for it, Quinlan was reasonably sure that combined, they could put down one unarmed, shackled, renegade knight. To absolutely no one's surprise, the temple actually had a chamber specifically designated for the trials of dark Jedi, but it had been closed off for centuries after the last dark Jedi had gotten free of his restraints and killed 6 knights, including the current Grand Master of the Order, as well as himself. Quinlan had poked inside while the council was still debating where they were actually going to hold the trial, and immediately regretted it, since even centuries afterward the Force still rang with violent, unexpected death. The council must have come to the same conclusion, because they had decided to hold Obi-Wan's trial in the council chamber. It was the only nod they had made so far to the likelihood that Obi-Wan probably wasn't going to break loose and try to kill them, since the chamber wasn't set up to hold Force-using criminals. Obi-Wan strode to the center of the round room and came to a stop, settling into a knight's formal stance, his cuffed hands clasped loosely together in front of him. His cool blue gaze flickered around the room, his expression calculating as he took in the 12 masters seated there. Jocasta Nu, the master in charge of the Jedi Archives, and the Dark Woman, one of the most famed masters in the Order, were proxying for Eeth Koth and Yoda, and both women sat stiffly in their borrowed chairs, watching Obi-Wan as warily as the 10 regular members of the Council. Obi-Wan waited until the 3 advocates had entered the room and the doors had shut, before he bowed to the Council, the formal bow of a high-ranking Naboo military officer to a group of civil officials, rather than that of a knight or padawan to the Jedi Council. He couldn't quite manage the full thing with his hands cuffed, but Quinlan thought he made a pretty decent attempt under the circumstances. "Masters," he said, his voice light and dry. "Obi-Wan Kenobi of Naboo, formerly Obi-Wan Kenobi of the Jedi Order," Mace Windu said, leaning on an elbow. "You are brought before this council to answer the charges of committing crimes against the Force, the Order, and the Galactic Republic. You are charged with having broken your vows as a Jedi Knight of the Republic and turned to the dark side of the Force, abusing your position as a Jedi Knight and the power granted to you by the Force to commit atrocities, including but not limited to treason, terrorism, espionage, and murder, including that of members of this Order. How do you plead?" Obi-Wan's expression was, if anything, bored. "Not guilty," he said. "You deny that you have committed treason," said Shakti. "I am an officer of the Royal Naboo Security Forces and the Confederacy of Independent Systems Military," Obi-Wan said. "I've committed no treason against either the Crown of Naboo or the Confederate Congress. If you're talking about the Galactic Republic, Master T, then I'll remind you that the secession of the sovereign system of Naboo from the Republic 3 years ago was fully legal under the dictates of the Rusyn Reformation, which allow any system to leave the Republic without repercussions. Which, I will add, neither the Galactic Senate nor the Supreme Chancellor of the Republic abided by. His gaze flickered coolly around the room again. I would also like to remind this council that I am not now, nor have I ever been, a Jedi Knight. I resigned from the Jedi Order when I was still a Padawan learner. I never took a knight's trials, or swore a knight's vows, and the vows I broke were those of a Jedi apprentice, not a Jedi Knight. Is there a reason I'm being treated as a renegade knight, not a Padawan? Quinlan had been wondering that himself, since no one on the council had been willing to give him a straight answer. The council has determined that your abilities are those of a knight, not a Padawan, and has acted accordingly, Apo Rancisis said. Moreover, Master Kenobi, while you may not have taken the trials of knighthood, it is traditional that any Padawan who slays a Sith Lord in single combat is considered to have passed his trials in combat. That is not what I was told 12 years ago before I resigned the order, Obi-Wan said flatly. I was told that I would be confined in the temple while my suitability for the order was reassessed, and that if I was lucky, I might be granted permission to undertake my trials. Do you deny that your abilities in the Force are equal to those of a Jedi Knight with 10 years' experience? Obi-Wan shrugged. No. I do, however, object to being accused of abusing a position I never held. I'm not a Jedi. I haven't been a Jedi for more than a decade. I was never a knight, and I never claimed to be one. Considering the extents that this order has gone to, in order to dissociate themselves from me, you should be aware of that. I was born a Jedi, I was raised as a Jedi, I was trained as a Jedi, and I acted as one until I resigned this order. He glanced around again. Most of you were there when I made that decision, so it shouldn't be that hard to remember. Quinlan resisted the urge to drop his head into his hands and groan. He'd forgotten how Obi-Wan could get once he got the bit between his teeth. He'd been a relatively quiet Padawan, but age hadn't mellowed him. If anything, it had done the opposite. Today, Queen Amidala was sheathed in gold from head to toe. Gems glimmering amongst the embroidery of her cloth of gold bodice, bangles on her bare arms that jangled gently as she moved, thin golden chains dotted with more gems braided into her hair, golden skirts that clung to her hips and thighs, the pattern of her bodice following it down before trailing off as her skirts began to bell outwards, revealing layers of fine gold lace. It accentuated the golden stain of the teardrops and scar of remembrance on her white-painted face, making her look as distant and unapproachable as a statue. "How many?" she spat, her hands clenching on the arms of her throne. They were in the holoconference room in the royal suite, which is one of the most secure rooms in the palace. Padme knotted her hands together beneath the long sleeves of her handmaiden's robe, torn between watching the queen and watching the hologram. Of the 1,346 clones we've been able to scan so far, Maltier said, all of them. The blue tint of the hologram made it hard to tell, but Padme thought that Maltier looked pale. She should be, Padme thought grimly. If Padme had just discovered what Maltier had, pale was the least of the things she would be. The queen was white-knuckled. You're certain, she said. This isn't a mistake or some Jedi trick. No trick, Your Majesty.
that was Anakin, standing beside Motier and Captain Rex in the hologram. The holoconference software made him look life-size, standing on the other side of the desk in front of the Queen.
Or at least it's not a Jedi trick. In our own timeline, it was a trap aimed at us. But in our timeline, the Jedi Order had commissioned the clone troopers from Kamino. Besides, Your Majesty, with all due respect, Jedi don't do this sort of thing. It's against our beliefs.
Or so you think, Amidala said coolly. But her gaze flickered to Obi-Wan, standing between Padme and Sabe with his arms crossed over his chest. You'll forgive me, Master Jedi, if I place very little trust in the Jedi Code of late. But since the clone troopers were commissioned from Kamino more than a decade ago, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. The Jedi did a better job at pretending to keep their code then.
Your Majesty?
Obi-Wan said, and Amidala looked at him, the chains in her hair chiming softly with emotion.
Who commissioned the clones? Was it you, or Chancellor, excuse me, Congressman Palpatine?
Amidala hesitated, and Padme felt her heart skip a beat.
It was one of my advisors, the Queen said slowly. It was after the occupation. He died soon afterward, before he had a chance to tell me. I didn't find out until Obi-Wan went to Kamino a few years ago.
He was tracking a bounty hunter called Jango Fett? Obi-Wan asked, raising his eyebrows.
He had been hired to kill you?
The handmaidens looked at him suspiciously, but all Amidala said was,
Yes. How did you know? The same thing happened in our universe, Obi-Wan said. Save that it was a Jedi who commissioned the clones, Master Sifo Dyas.
He paused, but Amidala shook her head, apparently not recognizing the name.
The Kaminoans knew nothing more, save that they had been commissioned to create and train the clones for the Jedi Order, for the Republic. We needed the soldiers too badly to ask too many questions.
It was you then, too? Amidala asked. For a moment she almost smiled, then the expression fell away.
Many of the records on Kamino were destroyed in a lab explosion, along with the Kaminoan who presided over the initial commission. What I've seen was all in order. I recognized Lord Mergem's signature. I don't mind accusing the dead of treason, providing there's evidence of it, but I can't believe that Nargis Mergem would... Well, I can believe he'd conspire against me, but a long con like this wouldn't have been his style.
Nargis? Padme asked. He was the one who commissioned the clones.
Amidala glanced at her. Yes, he was killed soon afterwards in a hunting accident. His Graysor threw him, and he broke his neck.
Padme looked between Obi-Wan and Anakin, and said, He couldn't have been responsible for it. The Mergems are old Naboo, one of the original colonial families. I knew Nargis. He would never act against the crown.
Oh, how many times I've heard that, Amidala sighed.
But you're right about Nargis, I think. That means someone else commissioned the Kaminoans to put that chip in the clones, and paid them extra not to tell me about it, no doubt. Damn them.
She closed one hand into a fist, clenching it so tightly that her knuckles turned white.
Someone will have to go to Kamino, Sabe said. With so many Holonet relays out, we can't trust communications. And Kamino's so far out that our transmissions are patchy even at the best of times.
Yes. Amidala propped an elbow on the arm of her throne and leaned her chin on it, then sighed.
She studied her handmaidens for a moment, then said, Lydia is with the First Fleet, and Irtai is at Glasswater with the SOB files, and I want you to stay here, Motier, and chase this down on our end. Ellie, you go. Tell Admiral Agathon to pick something fast from the home fleet to take you there. You know the procedure.
Yes, my lady, Ellie said,
bowing slightly. Right now? Wait until we're done here. Amidala looked back at Moitié, who was waiting patiently, and Anakin, who looked like he was about to explode from sheer nerves. Rex just looked inscrutable, as usual. Padme knew that Jedi like Anakin and Obi-Wan were capable of reading clones' micro-expressions, but she just didn't have the experience with clone troopers to do so. What do the doctors say? Can the chips be removed?
Theod Medical is confident that it will be a simple, painless procedure,
Moitié said.
They aren't located near the spine or anywhere where their removal could cause permanent damage, or so I've been informed. So far, all the ones that we've found, all 1,346 of them...
47,
Rex said, grimacing and raising one hand to his forehead. Obi-Wan had managed to use the Force to burn out the chip with its secret programming on the Queen Brea, but it was still there. Anakin and Moitié had apparently been able to scan for it on him, then on the Naboo clones. Padme didn't know how Anakin had been able to figure out that it was a chip rather than the deep-level programming the clones got for most of their military training, but they were lucky that that was what it was, since that was fixable.
47,
Moitié said, nodding at him.
All of them have been in the same place. The Kaminoans have a lot to answer for. Our own experts don't have any explanation for the blast of things. I suppose you could try giving some of our clones the code words Captain Rex and the Jedi know, but I wouldn't recommend it, Your Majesty.
Not least because we don't know what they'll do, Amidala said. Not to mention if they don't obey me, then we have a much bigger problem.
To be fair, Rabe pointed out, we have that problem anyway.
I was trying not to think about that. The Queen sighed and raised her chin from her fist. Test the rest of the clones on Naboo and in the home fleet if the medical ships have the capacity to run an atomic-level brain scan. They do, Your Highness, said one of the other handmaidens. Explain it away using whatever excuse you want. Once we've discovered the extent, we can release that information as necessary. She tapped a gold-painted finger against her chin, her wedding ring glinting in the artificial light. I'm hesitant to order the chips removed without hearing from the Kaminoans first, especially since we have no positive confirmation on what contingency orders are in place or what they are capable of. Committing a third of our fighting forces to brain surgery, even a supposedly quick and painless surgery, is not a proposal I am fond of, save in direst necessity. Rex shifted uneasily in the hologram, but didn't say anything. Amidala's gaze flickered to him. I am also, she went on, reluctant to leave those chips in place, not least because there is a very good chance that they pose a direct threat to Naboo and the lives of the men and women serving with our clone troopers. Thousands of Naboo citizens serve this crown without having any kind of special programming. Every clone in the Royal Naboo Security Forces has proven himself and his loyalty to Naboo. I will not doubt them now, when no clone in the service of Naboo has given me reason to do so.
What do you want me to do, Your Majesty?
Moitié asked. Amidala settled both hands on the arms of her throne, straightening her back. Something about her drew the eye. Padme couldn't have looked away from her if her life depended on it. Remove the chips from the clones assigned to the Palace Guard and the clones at Theed City RNSF.
All of them?
Every single one. I don't care whether or not the clone troopers in the service of Naboo are loaded blasters pointed at my head. I do care about someone who believes that they can manipulate the citizens of Naboo to act against their wills, in a manner repugnant to the oaths they have sworn. I've read the Kaminoan reports on the creation of the clones. There is no mention of these chips anywhere in them. That means someone put them into my troops without informing me. When I find out who it was, I'll have their heads. Take the chips out. Someone outside of the holoprojector's pickup range said something, making Mothier and Anakin look over. After a moment, Mothier said,
Dr. Bethan recommends beginning with a small test group.
No. If I can't trust the men who guard my body, my office, and my planet, not to act in their right minds without some device controlling their actions, then I've already lost. Inform the doctor that Feed City RNSF is the test group. We are going to war. We cannot afford anything that compromises the soldiers that we trust to defend this system. Am I clear?
Yes, Your Majesty.
Stay at Feed Medical, Amidala ordered. Take this thing apart. I want you to find out everything about it short of actually activating it. I also want to know if it is Kaminoan in origin, or if it can be traced to someone else. Get someone at Glasswater to go through everything we have on Kamino and the clones and find out. It's in there somewhere. And if it isn't, then Kamino has something to answer for. Use any resources you have to. Mothier bowed to her.
Yes, Your Majesty.
Someone will die for this, Amidala said. Make that very clear. We will not suffer interference in the lives of our citizens and our soldiers. Not now, and not ever. She tapped her fingers on the arm of her throne. Master Skywalker, Captain Rex, you have our thanks. We will be grateful for any other assistance you can render in this matter. Anakin bowed, the stately bow of a Jedi Knight to a reigning monarch, and somehow managed to convey the gravitas of his position, despite the fact that he was in civilian clothes and still had a smear of engine grease across his forehead. Rex saluted. An instant later, the hologram shut off. Amidala slumped back in her throne, pressing her fingers to her forehead. 2 million clone troopers, she whispered. 20,000 in this system alone. My ancestors have mercy on us. Sabe stepped over to put a hand on her shoulder, but she was watching Obi-Wan and Padme over the Queen's head. You know something you haven't told us, she said. What is it? Amidala lifted her head as they both hesitated. Do you know who did this? Padme looked at Obi-Wan, who said reluctantly, We have a suspicion, but not a certainty. The Queen studied them for a moment. You have a name, she said slowly. When Obi-Wan didn't answer, she straightened up and snapped, Everyone out, except for you two. My lady, now! The handmaidens left, Sabe last, and glaring at them. Amidala waited until the door had shut behind them before she said, Tell me the name. Your Highness, tell me the blasted name! This is a Jedi matter, Obi-Wan began, which made the Queen bare her teeth in delicate rage. The Jedi Order has no authority on Naboo. Obi-Wan shifted, clearly torn, and Padme said, Palpatine. Amidala stared at her. What? Obi-Wan shut his eyes, his lips moving silently. The former Supreme Chancellor, Padme said. Palpatine's harmless, Amidala said, shock wiping her face clean of all expression. He's a fool. An ambitious one, but a fool nonetheless. He was useless 13 years ago as Supreme Chancellor, and useless today as a congressional delegate. And you want me to believe that he's behind this plot? Obi-Wan had one hand pressed to his forehead, wincing. But Padme leaned forward and said, You'll believe us when we say there is a plot, but not that Palpatine is part of it? I was there when he set our galaxy on fire, Your Majesty. He's a very good liar. He had us all fooled for years. The Senate, the Jedi, the Republic. Palpatine couldn't plot his way out of a paper bag, Amidala said.
The fact that he managed to maneuver himself into the Supreme Chancellorship, short as his tenure was, is the only sign I've ever seen that there might be some divine underpinning to the universe. And that isn't suspicious to you at all? Padme demanded. That man destroyed everything I spent my life trying to build, everything I'd fought for, everything my friends died for. The monster who... She had to stop, because she was trembling with fury, her fists clenched so tightly that she could feel her nails digging into the soft flesh of her palm. Obi-Wan put a hand on her shoulder, and she leaned into his touch, trying not to think about the memory of those last minutes in the Senate building, of Palpatine's mad, dying laugh. "If I cannot have Empire, I will have chaos." He'd ripped apart her mind. He tried to devour her soul. He'd burnt her entire universe to bare ash. Obi-Wan's grip tightened on her shoulder. "Palpatine is the Sith Lord Darth Sidious," he said, and Amidala blanched at the name, recognizing it. "Maul's master, the being behind the Trade Federation invasion of Naboo, the man who played the galaxy as a puppet master pulls strings. It was true in at least one other universe beside our own, and in that universe he destroyed the Jedi along with the Republic to make himself an emperor. You can ask Anakin about that, Your Majesty." Amidala's hands clenched on the arms of her throne, but Darth Sidious's name seemed to have convinced her of their certainty. "Palpatine," she repeated. "I can't believe it." "You trust him that much?" Padme demanded. "No, the only thing I trust him to do is what will benefit him the most in the short term," Amidala said. "I just can't believe he's competent enough or ambitious enough to try and take over the galaxy, let alone thoughtful enough to do what you're suggesting. And a Sith Lord." "Your Majesty," Obi-Wan said, "you are married to a man who was, a Jedi Knight. You know that the Jedi will never speak idly of the Sith." Amidala nodded once, a short, sharp gesture that set the chains in her hair to swaying. "Can you prove it?" "Not in any way that would convince a jury," Obi-Wan said. "I know what he is here because he was sloppy in a way that our Palpatine would never have attempted, because he didn't know that there was a Jedi Master walking free in this palace." The Queen's gaze flickered to Padme. "Rabe said he bothered you." "He did a bit more than that," Obi-Wan said. Amidala bit her lower lip, smearing the gold stain of the Scar of Remembrance, and making Padme wonder if something similar had ever happened to her. Stars only knew how long Palpatine had lived in this palace with her, Obi-Wan, and what he could have done. Without meaning to, Padme's gaze went to Amidala's still flat stomach. The Queen was looking at Obi-Wan. "You're certain," she whispered. "I'm afraid so," he told her gently. She folded her hands carefully in her lap, twisting her wedding ring around her finger. "Anyone but a Force user, I'd have them killed on the suspicion and have done with it," she said, the frankness of the words making Padme wince. "Ancestors know that Palpatine has caused me enough trouble over the years that I wouldn't miss him. But I won't send anyone other than Obi-Wan after a Force user. And he's..." She swallowed. "He isn't here." Padme was still reeling from the idea of anyone using Obi-Wan Kenobi as their personal assassin. But Obi-Wan himself said, "I wouldn't recommend having him assassinated, Your Highness, even by another Force user." "Are you volunteering?" "Happily," Obi-Wan said, making Padme look at him sharply. save that the last time someone dealt him a killing blow, he had contingency plans of his own in place to take the whole galaxy with him in his dying.
The clones, Amidala said.
Yes, and the Confederacy's battle droids, I believe. And other things. The Senate building and the Jedi Temple were both wired to explode, and I think... He winced. I could feel other things in the Force before we were forced to flee. I could not in good conscience allow that to happen again.
Amidala flinched, understanding the scale of the devastation.
You killed him? Anakin did, but I was there. We all were. He was watching her, his gaze sharp, but his expression unreadable. Padme couldn't help but wonder what he saw in the Queen, if he saw the shadow of her or something else, something he liked more or less.
A dead man's switch, Amidala said. She raised a shaking hand and pushed it back through her hair, chains jangling and gems glinting in a wild array of color.
That bastard would. The only thing I trust him with is his own instinct for self-preservation. He might not be able to hold his office, but he'll save his own skin and damned if anyone else burns in his place. I will not allow any being to destroy everything I have built, everything I have fought and bled for. She shut her eyeshadow shimmering as golden as her gown, and after a moment opened them again.
Why not tell me earlier?
Obi-Wan and Padme looked at each other. Padme opened her mouth to reply, but it was Obi-Wan who spoke.
We didn't trust you, Your Highness. And for myself, I would not see another galaxy burn because someone couldn't stay their sword hand.
Amidala bit down sharply on a fingernail. I'll give you both those, Jedi. I wouldn't have trusted myself not to call for an executioner if you hadn't told me about the dead man's switch first. Her gaze went to Padme. Our ancestors know I haven't told you everything either. Did you tell your boys to find out about the clones?
Anakin made that decision on his own, Your Highness, Obi-Wan said cautiously.
She raised an eyebrow, but didn't remark on that. She leaned back in her chair, rubbing her fingers together and looking up at the delicately carved ceiling panels. At last, she said, Congressman Palpatine is still off-world for the next week. If he is what you say he is, the matter is slightly more delicate than it might appear from an outsider's perspective. The clones on the moons won't be scanned until he returns to Naboo, nor the ones in his escort, so he won't be informed that the chips have been found out. He'd be a fool to act now, not with the Holonet relays down on the Republic presumably gathering its forces.
Do you believe us? Padme asked, folding her hands together so tightly that she felt her bones creak.
She was glad that Obi-Wan's hand was still on her shoulder. She needed the support.
Amidala hesitated.
I believe that Obi-Wan Kenobi will never speak lightly of the Sith, she said at last. And I believe that you would lie to my face, Senator, if you thought it meant preserving the lives of our people for one moment more.
The first day of Obi-Wan's trial concluded without a verdict, and without any of the Jedi in the council chamber snapping and force-choking him, which Quinlan had to admit he'd been tempted to do a few times.
Well, that could have gone better, Quinlan said, as they stepped into the turbolift, accompanied by 6 temple guards. Thom and Thrasan remained in the antechamber, talking quietly with Plo Koon and Shaak-Ti.
Obi-Wan raised an eyebrow.
Really? I think it went well.
Quinlan stared at him.
When you walked into that room, about half the people on the council wanted to rip your head off and wear it as a hat. When you walked out of it, everyone on the council wanted to rip your head off and wear it as a hat. I kind of want to rip your head off and wear it as a hat, and I'm on your side.
Obi-Wan smiled, while the temple guards looked away. The turbo lift began to descend.
I've been told I have that effect on people sometimes.
How is Queen Amidala still married to you after 13 years? Quinlan demanded. How has she not snapped and stabbed you in the face?
Obi-Wan touched a finger to his wedding ring.
She loves me, he said.
Well, that's clearly the sign of a disturbed mind.
Obi-Wan gave him a sharp look. For an instant, the force stirred, enough that Quinlan's hand twitched towards his lightsaber, and the temple guard started to move in. Obi-Wan's gaze flicked sideways towards them, years of experience in his calculating expression. His wrists flexed on his manacles, and his stance shifted.
The most dangerous man in the galaxy, Quinlan remembered belatedly, and no friend to the Jedi.
The moment passed before he had time to take a second breath. Obi-Wan grimaced and relaxed his shoulders, raising his cuffed hands to rub at his beard.
I've been telling her that for years, but what can I say?
Quinlan's nerves were still jangling with what could have been. He glanced aside, the near miss of averted violence humming in the force. The temple guards were still on edge, their fingers hovering over the triggers of their stabersavs.
He forced himself to say, I can't believe you actually told the council you killed people for Queen Amidala.
Obi-Wan's gaze flickered up toward the ceiling.
I should think that was obvious.
There's a difference between everyone knowing it and you coming out and saying it.
I wasn't exactly naming names.
You admitted to murdering people while you were still a Padawan.
Murder is a strong word, Obi-Wan said. It was war.
It was in cold blood,
Quinlan said, surprising himself with the vehemence of the words.
He might not be the best Jedi Knight in the Order, but there were still things that even he wouldn't have done without hesitating first.
Obi-Wan, by his own admission, hadn't hesitated. Obi-Wan looked at him. Somewhere in the depths of the Force, pushing through past the null effect of the collar, Quinlan caught a flash of old, distant regret. But all Obi-Wan said was,
It was war.
You're not exactly doing well as far as convincing the Council you haven't turned to the dark side, Kenobi, Quinlan said.
The turbo lift settled to a halt, the door sliding open to reveal a dozen or so temple guards waiting to escort Obi-Wan back to his cell. Obi-Wan glanced at them, sighed, and said,
Are you coming?
No, I'm going to talk to Tholm and Thra and see if there's some way of salvaging this disaster, Quinlan said. Try not to start any more riots.
Obi-Wan grinned, sharp and without any real amusement, and let the temple guards guide him out of the turbolift.
No promises,